we welcomed four services from Nefi, and one of the teams, together with that and all the other NGOs, is training on the relevant act to the elders and community leaders, and that was provided by our Housing Prevention Agency. Because a lot don't understand the Children's Act, the Domestic Violence Act, and they all seem to get it within our custom produce program. We've done a 24-hour of the December period just to ensure that anybody in the publication knew the Relevant Act and not the community members of Wales in 154 cases. And in that time, we had over 438 reports of domestic violence cases, but that was relating to any form of substance as part of that. We then set the family program. We've got a big program which is called the Difficult Change, in school program, sport and recreation, youth and skills development. Someone spoke about holiday programs. Last year we had the Jonathan Butler Foundation holiday program running in the Cotton Province, where 1,000 children were kept off the street for a period of 10 days. And it also created influence with some of our youth because they earned stipends. They were 50 volunteers with 1,000 children in that period. Family preservation project, we've got a good effective services program run by the Department of Social Development. Mental program, art and culture, we work very closely with our local arts in the community. We've initiated last year a men's forum because we feel that the fathers need to stand up as well. And a lot of times it's only mostly women that's fighting the substance abuse comes down. And so the men's forum is a critical part because we don't have role models as fathers anymore. So the men's forum is a critical important part. Also taking on negative strategies and replacing it with positive messages within our community. Positive lifestyle programs as well as community cleanup programs. These are all integrated programs that have been initiated by the local Black Action Committee in partnership with our main stakeholders, which is Department of Social Development. That's just some of our highlights, which was the Best Art Advocate, so we celebrate the partnership. We prepared the International Drug Awareness Week, Jonesy's of the Yellow campaign. It was launched in Amarova, but went throughout Jonesy. And then a lot of our arts in the farm and silencing our focus and creating positiveness. Sports, I think we've reported the Minister of Sports was here in the Agassiz Sports Festival. Then one of the others that we also launched is our research, media and support campaign. And we work very closely. One of our stakeholders is our local media stations, which is our ethics, our local urban newspapers, door-to-door campaign. Community leaders with the NEC on Social Development and NLP, the practice, community-based substance abuse and related skills research. And I think earlier the Honourable spoke about research documents. We have done one last year and looking at the intervention after the president was there to see what the outcomes were and how effective it was. So we do have documents available on that as well. Obviously, the important departments that need to work with our local practice committee. That's just some focus on our research and media support that we have. Actually, since the 2013 to 2015, since the president has visited Amarova Park, we now have a safe house in Amarova Park for children under the age of 18. We have a good money that is on a treatment center for men aged 18 to 65. They have a completely mobile bus. They have a mobile counseling bus, a primordial mobile program. 94 local drug action committees were established in the housing province. Regular meeting and capacity building workshops by province. The provincial customs abuse meetings at least once every 3 months. And then monthly regional local drug action committee meetings. Increase in clients for the need of rehabilitation. Ensure accountability and continue to ensure that services are rendered in the community, so we do a lot of advocacy. more community involvement and activism in creating a drowsy community, because it's driven from the bottom up and not from the top down. And we become self-reliant as a community. We develop programs at the department town board to support us in the community. The workshops, we created and maintained an integrated community from the writing and education stages and challenges, like the South Africa. Evaluation of our Beloved Park service intervention, that was the door-to-door campaign, where we had a pre- and post-summit report, and that was quite interesting. Some of the departments came against us in the pre-summit to say what they have done and how they have done it. We began the door-to-door campaign. It wasn't as effective as what we had hoped to be. And so from that, we could go back and look at lessons learned. We created and maintained a social network, Christ for substance abuse and other related ills as a local direction committee. Substance abuse summit, provincial DSC initiated engagement with other city departments and local drug action committees by the substance abuse summit last year. This shared concept is able to bring about complementary and synergy of services in the best interest of our community. Research on services and intervention in substance abuse and other related social ills was conducted in our Beloved Park prior to the summit. We do have pre- and post-summit reports available. Important lessons learned. Our has to be community-driven, bottom-up approach. Outreach cannot be a monthly or quarterly delivery. It has to be operational within the community in the day-to-day operation. An integrated approach with all relevant departments in the community is key to the success of implementation of the National Drug Master Plan in the local community. Challenges faced, many departments, organizations and key stakeholders still lack in understanding their mandate in relation to the substance abuse act, the National Drug Master Plan, and ALDER. And a lot of this is, if you're looking at NPA or you look at SAPS or whatever, some of them don't understand where they fit into. Maybe on national level, but on the ground, we still have a lot of challenges in having an integrated plan because they don't understand. One of the biggest challenges is duplication. Lack of integration and competitiveness leads to wasteful resources and lack of positive feedback. And this is one of the things for the Department of Education since a brochure on substance. Department of Social Development since the same brochure with their logo on. Department of Community Safety since the same brochure with their logo on. And the duplication of resources. And if we had one central point to that could happen, we could use that resources more. No collaboration by departments in the community, intra and inter, not enough awareness to communities pertaining to the mandate functioning, representative and services pertaining to the ALDER. I think we need more positive messages or bringing the message up, the important role that the local direction somebody has in combating substance on a local level. Resources not available to the ALDER, such as offices, traveling, telephone calls, and stationery. And this is supposed to be the mandate of the local government of the city of Johannesburg. I said earlier on, many departments don't understand the role. And I think one of the issues we have is that our local municipalities have not bought into the local direction committee. We know the ones on the ground, our social workers, they work the city, is part of our program. But when it comes to the implementation from the city, we do have a big gap there. Early on, someone spoke about lack of participation of SPOs, and that is critical because we've got beautiful buildings in our community that we use on a Friday or on a Saturday, and it would be nice if they were integrated in our program. In conclusion, it is not because things are difficult that we do not gain. It is because we do not gain that they are difficult. Motivation is what gets us started, and this is what keeps you going. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It was very interesting, especially the direction for the presentation. We need to make it the main objective in a project, and we need to use an approach that takes into account all stakeholders and all sectors. Regrettably, we said in the presentation that it's not all departments that actually are coming aboard or that have the full understanding of the research of master plan, and I think that needs to be attended to as a matter of agency. But I was impressed that you've got your own nature master plan in the local structure. And intervention at the level of the city is what is going to assist IGC and the map on the family. But I'm worried with all the interventions, the assistance, the commitment that we are all trying to put into this own issue of self-insight, the patterns, the trans patterns, I think are getting away with it. I don't know the seriousness with which every country we are taking this issue. Because in other countries, people are suspended today for being a travel. I don't say the suffering of the decadent, but we see that there's a breach. We look at the whole issue of people that are the source of the problem. Because if we are registering as a government of the on the world, I think he is going to resolve a lot of the challenges as well. What are you doing about those that are actually perpetrating sale of drugs? Either synthesized within the country or coming outside into the country. You know, this issue of drugs was something that we are pretending in cities a decade ago. But it is actually into rural areas. It is actually key also that in all the rural areas there is this problem. It's a new kind of phenomenon, so to say, but it means the problem is getting bigger and we need to sharpen our intervention. I am not going to comment, never going to comment after this next presentation, which is going to be given by the Nixon Health and Development Foundation Alliance.
Morning everyone. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the Select Committee, and everything we see and left. Thank you very much for inviting us here to talk to you today. I'm Kavira Chatterjee from the Health Promotion and Development Foundation Alliance, and I'm also from Salt City, and but today I'll be speaking on behalf of the Promotion and Development Foundation Alliance. I'm members of the Alliance of the Medical Research Council, the National Council Against Smoking, the School of Public Health, and Victoria School of Public Health. This is an alliance that is about 4 years old now, and we've basically been trying to look at ways in which we can address many of the health challenges through prevention and health promotion, rather than the kind of focus that we have right now where there's some patient information but a lot more focus on treatment. So we believe that there should be a mixture. So to start on an example there, one of the things we would like to see reduced is obviously road traffic deaths and interpersonal violence as well. This is a PO. We had a cartoon recently showing us the levels of violence in our country, and it's basically murder. And we often focus on the criminal. We're looking at how many people die from guns and knives and, you know, those kinds of things make headlines much more. But what we forget is that 2,000 people are killed every year by gun violence. I'm sure I don't need to say this to this particular community and this particular audience about the link between ill health and poverty, but although we have a public health system which is free, the cost of treatment is free, but the cost of getting to treatment, for example, the transport cost, is not free. If you take the day off to go to the clinic or to go to the hospital or to go with someone in your family and you have to take unpaid leave, that is a lot to you and your family, and economic loss that is not being gained. You might get the treatment, but you won't get the income that you lost from not going to work. So this spiral of ill health contributes to low socioeconomic status and is reinforced in people who already are coming from disadvantaged environments. So one of the starting points of the HPDF's engagement with setting up a health promotion foundation was really a study done by the faculty in 2010, which looked at government spend to address alcohol related harm. So the budget allocation for 2009-2010, both national budget and provincial budget, was looked at. And what we found was that state government departments like health, basic education, social development, transport, justice, letting people up over the weekend, financial services, that cost came to 17 billion for that 1 year, okay? And the income that year from alcohol sales, which is VAT and excise tax, was 16 billion. So as a country, we were spending 1.1 billion more on addressing alcohol-related harm than we were earning. And this was a very conservative study. We only used it about the World Health Organization, and they were okay to use the estimate of the cost. So subsequent to that, the Department of Trade and Industry did their own study in 2011, and they found that the cost was 37.5 billion. We put MRC down because the Medical Research Council and UCT were involved in supporting DCI in getting those figures. So in actual fact, it's costing us as a country 37.5 billion in direct and indirect costs to address alcohol-related harm. Of course, we didn't have to quantify the human cost because it's impossible to quantify the impact of a life loss or disability or children growing up without one or both parents. We can't do that, so we didn't. We took it as a financial cost. Taking quite a lot of research actually that has allowed us to make policy. We've got the Medical Research Council, Alcohol and Drug Abuse Unit. People have talked about the KENU. We've got the Youth Behavior Survey that gets done, I think, every 5 years. We've got the South African Demographic and Health Survey, the Department of Health Survey on a regular basis, and the Human Sciences Research Council does a lot of work. And of course, we've got the World Health Organization as well. So we might not have all the information we need, but we have a lot of information that can inform policy. And that's what we need to be aware of as well. That if we put all of this information together and it takes us back to the last 50-70 years, we actually do have a lot of information that can inform us when we have to make decisions about what the way to go forward. This was a paper done in 2009, basically looking at stats from 2004 and looking at the alcohol attributable burden in other diseases. So these are the top 8 diseases that are linked to alcohol consumption. Okay? And just again, I'm sure I'm changing things that you already know, but alcohol is the third largest contributor to death and disability in the country. And the figure that I gave you earlier, 37.5%, is actually almost 2% of GDP. So we're looking at a very serious issue. In terms of, this is about consumption, actually the figure is 7%, contributes to 7% of all
disability about his life here in hospital, which is higher than anything else.
Just in terms of consumption very quickly, from the use of the behavior survey, 38% of male children said that they have consumed alcohol in the last 30 days, so that would be almost 4 out of 10, and almost 3 out of 10 young women said so as well. And again, 1 in 3 males said that they were going to be drinking in the past month. And 2% drinking for the age of 30.
So the thing is, what do we do about that?
We have a choice. We can deal with it at an individual level, which is education, which is treatment, which is one-on-one conversations, or we can try and deal with it at a population level. So if you look at the evidence of from global strategy on alcohol from the World Health Organization, where they're taking the evidence from all over the world, and if the service is gender-based categories. And if you look at the more cost-effective practices, they would be changing the policy environment. So what would we do? We would increase the price of alcohol, we would ban alcohol advertising and marketing, and we would reduce the availability. So you reduce the amount of sale, you would reduce the number of outlets that are selling alcohol. Those are population-wide interventions that would cost less than individual intervention, which doesn't mean we mustn't have individual interventions. It just means you've got to add this to the mix because it will reduce consumption and it will reduce harm and it will reduce harm. So we got this slide from Thai Health because we found it very impressive slide. I'm going to see as well. That if you look at a triangle of cost, you will see that the most conventional health care takes 99% of budget. So the hospitals that we've got, the clinics we've got, the staffing takes 99% of our health budget, and health promotion takes 1%. So prevention takes 1%, treatment takes 99%. If we accept a health promotion foundation and invest more in prevention, we can flip that around. And that's what we think we should be doing as a neighbor. So we want to, we say that our view of health promotion is not just helping exchange, that it's changing the environment by changing the policy, like I just explained on alcohol, by making it easier for people to make healthy choices. So if we want people to exercise more, we need cycling lanes, we need gyms, we need exercise equipment, we need lighting in parks and security in parks throughout the day and into the night, so that people can use the space safely because otherwise they can't exercise. So it's really about understanding health promotion as more than the health education we've got at school when all of us are growing up. That's not the model we have in mind. So another example that we can use is that in the developing world, 80% of illness is caused by unsafe drinking and cooking water, or lack of access to water to wash hands. 80% of illness. So if you want to change that statistic, it's not telling people to wash their hands. If they don't have access to water, they don't have access to sanitation. So we need not only to work ourselves in ESD or only with the health department, but we have to be intersectoral. And because we're speaking here at a committee that is part of our government, we know that it is very difficult to work intersectionally if that structure has not been set up. So for example, we have the Interministerial Committee on Substance Abuse, and it has brought 9 or 10 ministries together. So we would say that the Health Promotion Foundation needs to be that kind of structure, because that planning needs to happen together and across government departments. This is the biggest challenge in health promotion. So we've seen this model in Thai Health, we've seen this model in Australia, in Singapore, in Malaysia, because it is chaired by a deputy president, and it has on that structure these government ministers who define all the plans together and implement it. And the funding for this needs to come from tax burden and additional tax on alcohol and tobacco because it has two benefits. If you increase the tax on the price of alcohol and tobacco, consumption goes down. That's the evidence. If the price goes up, consumption will go down. Consumption goes down, harm will go down. But you've added an extra tax and you're allocating that tax to prevention. So you never have to worry about where the money is coming from, and it's not coming from treasury. It's coming from the harmful product. Okay, so there's a win-win there. The major cause of disease burden in the country, we often say about alcohol, tobacco, which is why we're giving you examples from there, but actually these six would have been the major causes of the disease burden in our country. So we have to address all of them. And another one that's not here is intercourse violence. It's number two, and obviously HIV is number one in our country. So a lot of these issues, we have all of them, are behavioral issues. They are complex issues. It's not that you say to somebody, stop smoking or stop drinking. If I don't drink or I don't smoke or I don't take drugs, it's not an issue to me. But if I transfer that and talk about chocolate or talk about bread, you know, then somehow it becomes easier for me to understand that just because I have a problem with these issues, they have a problem with those issues. And is the environment supporting them to adopt a healthy behavior or not? And most of the time our environment is not. And we don't need to forget that we don't live in one country, we live in many countries. If you live in Johannesburg, coming from there, in Gauteng, if you live in Canton or Woodside, there's no alcohol outlets open 24 hours a day around you. So if you want alcohol, you're not going to get. But if you go to Alvarado Park, or you go to the Major, or you go to LA, you can get whatever you want. Even if the place is closed, you set a knock on the door, and they will open it for you. And that's because the law is not being applied in the same way, and the social norms in the country are different in different communities, but that also goes back to the history of what was allowed and what is not allowed in the past that is carrying over today. I think affordability and availability, we've already talked about that. And I will really mention that we need to go upstream back in, which is why it's so easy to get hold of these things that are unhealthy. And for example, alcohol is really cheap in South Africa. If you look at the price of alcohol, we all know that the tax goes up every year, but it goes up 15 cents, 25 cents, 1 rand on a bottle of wine maximum, or 15-25 cents on a can here, which is not linked to inflation. Therefore, it makes the product as cheap as it was last year. So if you want something to become more expensive, it has to be inflation linked. And the same applies to junk food. The same applies to cakes and, you know, other kinds of things, but healthy food needs to become cheaper. And we don't have any lobby for making healthy food cheaper in our country. We don't have any lobby for getting schools to make sure they sell only healthy food, or that they make sure that they teach young children how to eat healthy and what does it mean to eat healthy. Just to understand how many teaspoons of sugar there are in fruit juice and how many in cold juice. Almost the same. But if everyone gets food, you're thinking that it's paper or if you have less sugar. So this is really basic information that we don't know about how to check our health. But we focus on things that are traditionally viewed as harmful. Which doesn't mean that they're not important for us. I'm just going to make the point of the foundation. So in terms of the foundation itself, we see this as being an independent implementing agency. And the reason for that is the very intricate nature of work that's required. Because, you know, yes, we want it to be chaired by somebody like the deputy president, but for the reason you're having a discussion today around what NGOs can do, because of the speed with which NGOs can operate, the purpose to communities from the ground, the ability to innovate, the ability to use research as soon as it is available, which we have done continuously throughout our campaigns at HPDF and as possibly working on alcohol. Doing it as a community check, it works slowly. And that is just the nature of difference between the civil society. We think also the health promotion foundation can work across political parties and identify strategic national priorities, which is not necessarily different from government departments, from the national strategic priorities, but
it brings in more evenness when you're looking at different constituencies across country. So based on government department, for example, it might not be useful to go into violence against women in Muslim communities in Malaysia alone. But I have a motion foundation, it would be usable because they would be working at that level where rape becomes justifiable. Whereas at a more national level, at a provincial level, it's not justifiable because that's a minority population. Coordination is a very important part of what we have seen how promotion foundations bring across government departments. The research gap. If you've been following the Medical Research Council and HSRC over the last 5 years, they have to drop many of their programs because they have to focus only on the top 10 national health priorities. They can't do everything within that assessment. And that has an impact on what we choose to focus on programmatically in the next 3 to 5 years because we don't have that evidence. So this kind of sustained funding that you can get from the Health Promotion Foundation, you think that kind of research can be done. And I'm going to get to start just now about the money because you'll understand why I think that is, or why we think there's a lot more money there. Obviously, lobbying and advocacy, we don't have enough capacity, even in NGOs, we don't have a lot of capacity. Development agencies, whether you're talking about the EU or even different government departments, do not put money into policy advocacy. Because it means you are allowing them to change something that they have been doing. And although that is not a system, sometimes that is an interpretation of the system. But if you want policy to have healthy lunches in school tuck shop, someone has to advocate for that and put the research on the agenda. And we don't have that right now. Okay. So basically, what Client Health has done is that they've looked at excise tax that they were collecting from the tobacco and alcohol industry, okay? And 100% of that obviously goes to Treasury, which is the other part of the Ghana. And in addition to that, they applied a 2% surcharge, which the alcohol and tobacco industry has to pay, and that was put into the Health Promotion Foundation. The Health Promotion Foundation was set up through an act of parliament, which is why I'm bringing it to you here. Which helps them change the 5% tax in pretty much the same way we started to mention the tax on tobacco. So like I said, this is a win-win because you're reducing the price of the harmful product, and then that extra money is setting up the Health Promotion Foundation. Because you can say, private companies would know, this is the turnover. I think in SAP turnover in 2010 was something like $2.42 billion per annum, okay? So that's, when we calculated the portion for us on the 1%, we thought that in South Africa, that would contribute to about $100 million per annum available for our promotion foundation. Because we went for 40%, we get even, or for 0.5%, we get $50 million. That is available and sustainable. So if you knew that effort was available in 2010, you would be able to predict for the next 5 years what would be available for our promotion. And this is critical for those societies to research organizations, because research is not done in 1 year. Advocacy is not done in 1 year. So policy change, we need 4 or 5 years of advocacy. To see the impact of anything you're doing on the ground, you need a 2 or 3 year evaluation of this. So implement 18 months, then you've got a 10 year intervention, your research impact evaluation is going to implement it. That would take a process alone. If you're not getting resources to do for that length of time. So these are the gaps that we have that stop us from having the impact that the chairperson that you're asking about earlier on. Because we just begin the money in April or May, because it's been allocated in that budget. And we have to report by February next year. So we're not getting a whole year to do the work that we are supposed to be doing. The impact in Thai Health, they found that from 2000 to 2009, the number of ex-smokers increased from 1.6 million to 6.2 million. So they had a drop in the number of smokers from 1.6 to 6.3. Okay?
So you have an impact on the health system when you're saving, you've got 2.3 million health people. They have 12% dropping behavior, that means 1 in 10 more, drop from 2004 to 2007, a 31% drop in traffic accidents, and a 10% drop in the number of deaths. So instead of 6,000 deaths, it would have had 5,400 deaths in our case. Okay? So they have saved us. So they set up all these different programs, and all these different programs, where they've got
health,
practice, health in the community, traffic injuries, alcohol, tobacco, supporting systems, opening grants and innovations and new ideas, social marketing, clinical activities, children, dependent family health, and health promotion of the organization. And I think that that's an example, just to show that the diversity that is encompassed in our promotion. In Botswana, they already have a levy on alcohol. Right now, 40% on price of alcohol goes to the alcohol levy, and they have generated 441 billion Botswana kula between 2008-2014. And in Zimbabwe, the tobacco tax is used to fund HIV programs, but we don't have an amount for that. We obviously have had a lot of success with the part of the banning of public smoking and alcohol advertising, tobacco advertising. And I'm just going to wrap up with this one slide here. There are differences between alcohol and tobacco, obviously, but there are some commonalities, and we should work on those commonalities. And we definitely do the things that evidence shows work. So the consumption is the red line, and the pricing is the blue line. And you can see that as the price went up, consumption went down. And where you see consumption going under the chair, red line towards the end, is where the price has actually been stabilized. And maybe it's a real increase because it's not inflation yet. It's not just an amount that we thought we could get, but membership will allow me one more point. I want to tell you about what alcohol industry spends on advertising and marketing. So we looked at a study in 2010, looking at the top 10 advertisers in the country. Three alcohol companies were in the top 10. So FAB spent $364 million per annum. Grand House, $337 million per annum. The Scalp, $305 million. So together, we spend more than a million, just three companies. Government spent $249 million, government was 13th on the list. So we're doing some infrastructure, but we have to put it down here to show you. $249 million per annum is what government spent for everything. Alcohol, drugs, internal and child health, sex, drinking, pregnancy, everything. Okay? And that gives you an idea of how powerful the alcohol companies are with what they're doing. And they spent 50% of those billions over between October and December, the holiday season, when they know we're going to be going home any time with families. So it's very, very targeted marketing. Thank you.
We're coming to the end
of the presentation, I think it's time for us to start. We will raise our hands and the mic will go to you to make your comments or make an input or ask a question, and those that will be in the presentation will then respond to the question and comment. And some of you are actually afraid to ask a real question and some will be agreed. Because you say if you are afraid to ask a real question, okay, ask it. Because it's good. In fact, it's different and it's not meant to start in the way. So I'm going to start with the HOP here, the lady, the starting red, and then the gentleman. Is there a hand? Is that frequency from the other members? Is there any comment or question? That's right. That's it. This side. Another member from the Jefferson?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we add to that previous presentation the fact that the alcohol industry spends a little bit at the start. It's interesting to note that the alcohol industry has an organization called the Association for Responsible Alcohol Use, the AORA. The AORA represents the major alcohol producers, which is Grand House, S.A. Miller, and Stella. And the grand total, the intention of AORA is to basically dial back some investments into communities across South Africa for the damage or potential harm done by alcohol misuse. The total investment that they put into that between the three of them is $11 million in South Africa, which is not. The funds that they put in, all of that is used by the organizations that do work for cash prevention or people are alcohol syndrome prevention, which is great. And the older programs being funded by it, but if you look at the revenue versus the impact of alcohol on the student, you can understand how useless that actually is in context. And I think that the speaker was spot on that there is a need to address, I would say, probably the price, the most powerful lever, and that's what we're seeing from the World Health Organization policy recommendation. So I think the fact now that the national liquor policy is on the table has got the liquor industry very nervous, which is a good sign. And I think that there is a potential way forward with that policy that it's long overdue as a more stringent approach to these issues. And I think the liquor industry itself needs to be convinced that if they stop charging higher prices, that they still need their bottom line, but at least make them consumption. I think that's sure the one thing that on the first presentation I just wanted to mention the issue of the local drug action for the PAMA. And the Alpha Robert Park model that was presented I think is a very promising model. The Commission paper is trying to do something similar in Joachim Spain with setting integrated services from various departments being brought in. And it's a good practice in the sense that we understand now, especially when it comes to prevention of substances and alcohol issues, that harmful behaviors or risk behaviors need to be addressed holistically. It's not always the right route just to focus on drugs in isolation because risk behaviors are manifestations of psychosocial dynamics among families and to the community. And I think the Alderman Park model is a good model in that respect because it understands that you can't just focus on drugs alone, but you've got to bring various services and you've really got to bring alternative recreational opportunities, all of those things. But the challenge that came out of that, the fact or the statement makes that the municipality in Johannesburg was not buying into or supporting the local drug action committee. I think there's a bigger problem at work here because if you look at the legislation of the Prevention of and Treatment of Substance Abuse Act as it stands at the moment, a local drug action committee under Section 60 Extension a municipality must establish a local drug action committee to represent such municipality in the effects of the mini-road master plan. It also says that the names of the local various community must be appointed by the mayor of the municipality, and they must consist of officials from government bodies representing the local village. It needs to be members of the South African Police Service nominated by the local police station commissioner, a correctional official nominated by the area commissioner of corrections, a representative from an educational institution in the area, a representative from prevention, treatment and aftercare services within the municipality, and so forth. So I think what is unfortunate is that the local drug action committee that you got in El Dorado Park is not a local drug action committee in terms of the legislation, but it's something else. It doesn't mean to say that it should not exist or it's not a good thing to have, but it's important to then say how do we enable a structure like that to exist and possibly be funded and supported, given that the legislation at the moment doesn't provide that. The legislation is basically saying it should be a government structure. But the whole world of our structure is a lot of our structure. So I think the question is then how does government accommodate something like that? How does government support something like that? Because there is no provision for such a structure in this kind of legislation or policy. But it sounds to me like it probably should be because it seems to have advanced. And then I can think of how, you know, if it was almost an NGO, it could potentially be funded by the Department of Social Development, for example, the way that the Department funds various other services. So that is maybe one possible group. But I think there's confusion around the whole lack of the local drug action committees and what some of the structures are. Because we've got the same problem in the West Coast, though, of local drug action committees are being set up by the community, calling themselves local drug action committees, they're not necessarily speaking for immigration. And then that leads to the municipal officials getting in a flat about it because it's not appointed by a certain office in the structure in terms of the act. So that then, you know, you're using a particular resource if you don't actually tap into that government. So I think that's something. Thanks for that as well.
Thank you very much for the questions. I wish that our team also used to give it. And that maybe it's especially comments for the question. What was your name?
My name is Catherine Williams, I'm a physician with Axel PBH Care. I run a mobile wellness clinic, which is a community town with the youth and drug, and we provide testing and counseling and health behavior and intervention and HIV prevention and monitoring. I want to just respond to the comments around the data. And I know that it's a really interesting thing because we start to get a little bit better to do not see our users as criminals, but then we have to find another somewhere else. Other men as the drug dealer. I just want to tell you a story that happened last week with the drug dealer in Joe's Grover. I saw him a couple of months ago again for the test room, very interesting and warm and open health consultation. I saw him again last week. And he was telling me that it was really difficult for him in the community because he came out of jail for a good 2 years on drug dealing charge. And when he came back into his community, he was actually unemployed. Now he has a criminal record. And he talks about his distress and not being able to find any other work that allows him, as a young man, maybe in his 20s, to support himself and his family. And a lot of consultation was really around the difficulty he had as a person with a criminal record being integrated back into society. And he would not be in drug again. It was the social network, he described his studying colleagues as his brother, and he was unable to extricate himself out of that very economically based network. He had no other survival mechanisms. I ended up referring him to a church based NGO in Warrenburg that has an outpatient program and a skills training program, and he was in fact further up in Africa. And when I told him that this church based NGO that was, you know, for people who were from all over Africa, he spoke this up as a possibility of another community that could be some of his special needs and would understand his unique situation as a refugee. Another place we go to is Makatani in Salt River, which is very much a community of refugees. But so I'm saying is that the identity of drug dealer intersects quite strongly with a number of other social identities, being a young man of colour, being maybe a refugee, being someone who is a drug user themselves, and he was using heroin, so he wasn't able to stop them on a detox. And I just think it's important that we try to hold on to the complexity that people have, and rather than really treat people to one social identity, because it doesn't actually speak to their vulnerability. And so I just wanted to point, it's very tempting to try and find this other person that we can demonize and think. But actually, we all live in communities together where we, you know, these are neighbors and these are people that we know. And you know, maybe I would invite you to be surprised at how excited you are about a faith-based community that he could talk to you. But I have no idea about the spiritual needs friendship. So I could have written this into a drug dealer. But I think there is that complexity. And so it's more challenging, but I think it's very interesting. So that's just what I want to say about this, but I'll be honest. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I also to talk a little bit about drug dealer, like a lot of what the elder law and all people have said about their attempts to engage with the white population, when we view policing as security rather than safety, we try to exclude people from a particular domain, whereas if we look at it about safety, we try to be more inclusive. And one of the problems with targeting drug dealers is, first of all, use a drug dealer, you become a drug dealer, you can offer on companies, you know, these exclusions are actually quite arbitrary, they're not based on science at all. Okay? But the point is that when we see some price side reduction, so for example in Mexico, where we try to lock down on dealers very heavily, all that happens is they arm up and they become more violent and problematic people. And that causes increased levels of violence. Also if we look in the Russian Federation, for example, where they managed to very successfully cut down the supply of heroin, what happened is there's a looking company which is a far more dangerous drug than heroin and is made without precursor chemicals and is and over-the-counter code-based medications. So we've seen a very much unintended consequences. There is the Institute of Security study recently saying if we take low-level dealers out, we actually increase violence in our communities because when we push down here, there's a lot of money here. And so we've got to be very careful about making one thing the target. You know, people become drug dealers for a variety of reasons, but often those reasons are because there are no alternatives. And if we make baby formula illegal, that's what those people would be eating. It's not the drug itself, it's just because it's an economic opportunity there, which is actually in the rest of the environment.
Okay, thank you. I suppose it's really based on person's perspective as to where you're at and what your view would be. If you're in the community, if you're in the benches, with respect, all the research means nothing. I can assure you, for a long time in my family, the drug dealer was my brother, but he had to understand this space in relation to me. And I had to be bold enough at some point to say, you've become the enemy. Because you're killing my neighbors. You're killing our children, our community. We recognize that there's sensitivity. But in war, it always is. And in case we haven't recognized, we are at war. We are at war for the souls of our children. We are at war for the souls, the integrity of our community. And regrettably, when you're at war, even if you can't recognize your enemy, sometimes you will shoot. Because you're fighting for your own life and you're fighting for the lives of those that you are protecting. And the people said that children bowel center, we try to stay out of supply reduction processes. Because as a people center, we should open our arms to anyone that comes looking to help. For that reason, you won't find us standing on the corner, you know, with a fire at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock at night, trying to actually stop youngsters from accessing the dealer's house. But that does not mean that we're not in support of our brothers that are bold enough to light a fire, stand watch with a neighborhood watching service in no area for dealers. When you recognize them on a little scooters, if they're not into your center to help you, help them. God forbid if you're foolish enough to not search him when he comes through the doors. Now we might ask about the legalities of searching it. Well, it has to come into my digital center, and I'm treating vulnerable individuals, and I know he has a history of dealing, then I have to search it. So at that point in time, even though we are aware of human rights, and we respect and we honor human rights, at that point in time, I have to ask whose rights are more important right now. Because I've got 50 independent individuals in the center. How do I just open up treatment to somebody that has a history of being? So there's processes in our communities that Mitchell Slayton can relate to Alderado, as they can relate to Lavender Hill, as they can relate to Bonfiero, etc., etc. I think we should be bold enough to recognize that no decision would be made without due consideration. Chairperson, please allow us to say, we recognize what Mr. McDonald is saying, 100% correct. We had the difficulty of where I've got a young lady in this room, the teacher was mandated by the city at the time to just ban the LH unit to explain because it was not constituted in accordance with legislation, and that is 100% correct. But unfortunately, the only people that understand the heartbeat of the area is the community, and the only people that will be able to action strategies within the community that will be viable is that community. The reasons why the National Drug Master Plan was reviewed after a survey of 200,000 households is because you need to know what the community says is needed. Nobody, with great respect to our president, and every other advisor he might have in Parliament, they cannot give a better advice than the Master Plan community about what's needed there. And for that reason, government should be for the people, by the people, always, from the bottom up. We need to urgently find a mechanism to amend our legislation to make it legal, first and foremost, for our structures, like our project, to exist and to flourish and then to feed into what should be the local rights system. We've got no mechanism for that, but we need a mechanism for it. But to tell the mothers and fathers in our community who want to work to sit down because they are not aligned to the law, and I'm not saying that was just like don't get just reminded us, but to tell us to sit down is really foolish. Because this was playing at a structure that worked without the others. It was disbanded because of protests, and unfortunately at the moment nothing is happening. Except for the people of things. I thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to all that you will be doing here. That's fine. Yeah.
I thought I was next year. But then you get more questions.
That's fine. Honorable guests, I bring you this afternoon. I am Lisa Robert. Let me thank you for joining us. Now, as a comment, I love you now that I pass. I speak each good day. I run the sisters in Dallas, and our youngest edit is 6 years old. Now, when your motherly instinct kicks in, legislation is the last thing you think of. In Alvarado Park, our youth is dying, and we refuse to have that. The three people that you see are from Alvarado Park are the people who sacrifice the deadline at 2 o'clock in the morning when government is not there. Sometimes chefs are not there. Sometimes when we call on chefs, we wait 4 hours before the end comes out. Prior, and many people need to know the history of ours, prior to the presidential project to Alvarado Park, there were people working. Thank God the president came. We are so grateful for the mothers of the James who wrote that letter and the president decided who goes to Congress. We are so grateful for that. I love the freedom charter that says for the people shall govern. If we do not govern in our communities where we live, where the model we have on head, we are unable to change the whole of Colorado Park. But I can pick my street team. You see, until you have lived and breathed in these areas, and until you have experienced it, we can always work out better. we will still have many other round tables. But it would be so nice to come to this round floor and see how our children are dying daily. Eldorado Park in 2014 had 69 suicides, and they were all under the age of 21. Now for us, as community leaders, that was not happening. It should not happen at all. So, I stand here today, and I'm grateful for the opportunity, but for as long as I breathe, and I have the heartbeat granted to me by God, I will fight the scourge of grudge until God says it's over. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, please. Thank you very much, Chair Shooter. I am serving as a member on the Aquaba community of the Golden Rural Based Substance Use Center, or Basic Substance Use Group, to that, and Speaker next door to me, adding on the slide. So I serve on the Aquaba community on the board, but to pay the votes during the day, I work as a detective and I feel up the government. So I spend after hours providing my skills and expertise to make sure that our center becomes or stays sustainable like it has in the last 25 years. One of the things that I'm listening to is, and I agree with you, it's brilliant that they're traumatized. When Teresa asked me, will I be able to clean up the day in my diary, I said to her, a condition that's traumatized. And when the morning when I saw the latest agenda, I saw how that is years after that. So maybe the right time is too late. The reason why I raised that is that the president was very, very, very clear after the adoption of the National Development Plan in 2030. They all knew the government need to arrive at the National Development Plan. There's a lot of critique against the National Development Plan, that's a new level of document, and all kinds of things. As a person who can involve in social development, the last 21 years, I can say, after the Freedom Charter, the RDP, the National Development Plan, was probably the patient that we've ever had, because it was not just the government or the government officials, but a multidisciplinary group of people. Now, what I find especially in this discussion is alignment to the National Development Plan in answer to the point raised by our consular and other parts around the non-involvement of local government. I hope to come back to local government, but I've been in local government senior manager for 15 years now, so I don't speak on behalf of that. But amongst us, the MDP has four careers. One of them relates to coordinated action. It's one of those fundamental things that was raised by the planning commission, the point that came out of the interpretation, the lack of coordination, not in terms of horizontal alignment, because that alone was in terms of alignment of programs and policies. And what the ADP in the emphasized three areas, and one of those areas that I agree with the colleagues about the other part is the involving individuals and communities in their own development. The chairperson is UWC 1990, that was my 3rd year, so I was on program to your senior students. You will recall that any graduate, whether you graduated in industry or whatever, we were told that development is not about the delivery of a set of goods to a better citizen, but on active involvement in growing in knowledge. And that was the individual. I want to go further here and say that the premium of which that for the 12 of focus is performed high attended on behalf of my district in Scotland. It was very, very clear discussion to all of the studies in the Wisdom Cape to properly align its integrated development plans, the National Development Plan into the Provincial Development Plan, Cape Vision 2040. In fact, in the previous court investigation at the Cape Town International Court Investigation, we had the National Planning Commission to represent the case to all millions of the weekend and to all the diplomats. But the premier amongst our state, as one of the directors, is that substance abuse, HIV/AIDS, TB, all those cannot be dislocated from what the diplomatic community develops. The heart of what is happening. Talking about interpersonal violence being second leading cause against after HIV/AIDS, that between 2020 and 2024 in
into them easily, going later to the youth house for a few. I love the morning, and I love in a house called Bushta, a block away from the hospital. And I go to the public hospital often on the Sabbath. And I can tell you all those doctors will tell you, 80 to 90% of the families and family violence in the hills and towns are related to alcohol and drug abuse. It's a way to get it's estimate. They do fewer seriously street crime and we have an estimate of 90,000 gang members in the Western Cape. And I want to get to say that what we need to discuss now, or what you need to take up, relates to the issue of power and power. The reason why municipalities do not necessarily actively get involved in terms of the government is because of power to function that's not entirely responsible. And most municipalities will tell you that. We've got a mandate to deliver water and service, electricity, etc. When the AC comes to you and they see that you spend money on social development, they immediately query, why are you spending money on non-funded mandates? The second thing is, the state municipalities are now dependent on national infrastructure and national money without funding. National citizens tell you, why are you spending money on those things not spending money on fire and then for now, etc. And the fact why this is people in the country, we decided to take up the premium very, very seriously. And with a political vote demonstrated by our conferences, we will spend 10 million rand every year for the next few years for social and rural development, looking at public interviews, early childhood development, the elderly, families in terms of our community in terms of export, I'll finish now. And our president, Mr. Robert McDonald, professor, in terms of this, taking the MVP into action, kind of formal agreement between the MPs of the church and our executive body. And the agreement between signing between myself as the leader of the Director of Community Development and Mr. Robert McDonald. And in that, our company is 13 million rand, sufficient to what the municipal government, the Department of Development is spending in the communities in the world, that's what we are needing. How did we justify that to the region? We said that the principal system exists. Your integrated development plan should direct the budget. And our communities are allowed to participate in the integrated development plan. And that's where I want to ask the question to NGOs. Are you attending and participating in municipalities and IDP processes? If you're not there, then your needs is not related. Put that into the budget, put that into the level of the budget by the implementation, and I can tell you. I got 1.7 million last year for coaching recreation. In December, I spent it, and in the national budget, I was giving me another one. I had 1.3 million for vulnerable families and children in Kudu and substance abuse. In December, I sent it, January, I was giving me another one. It was the only department that got me one, not in my country. And the key to that was the partnership between us and the Department of Social Development. We've joined the initiative for DCAS, in part of sports and culture, so the more centers, the area is more centers, and the main part of the activity, I provide transport for farm school kids to go wherever they need to, because that farm school cannot afford for their children to get to the point. But there's an increase of farm school children before that in stealing copper there. We turn that around. We started in Eastern School, Kaki Kiska, and I'm going to bring in of the city. We have a final draft state on the local draft action committee. In the Greater Valley Municipality, we are currently evicting tenants for rental units who are selling drugs legally and selling alcohol legally. And it costs us a lot of money to actually get the right legal permission to evict those people. And this is the new kids. The kids are there somewhere. You have to work on it, because otherwise the NDP will be another document.
In conclusion,
I'll
conclude the ship.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm not going to give you an opportunity to comment, because I've also responded. Yeah, I'll respond. Thank the Honourable Chair. Most of what I have to say has been covered by Mr. Fuller, the previous speaker, who I've worked with previously in the Washington and the San Diego. We have covered most of it. I just want to say two questions. In all 9 provinces, we have a problem, a universal problem, and we need a political will in order to read this stuff against us. As a Western people, I have witnessed, and I told you so also at some stage, and I have witnessed that part of the potential that we need should come in terms of humanity. I'll give you a clear example. When you enter a land of Soweto, and when you enter the Bulletu or land of Kaidita, the robots are seeking to cut the land. A young staff coming from school thinks this is good. A lot of people to fetal alcohol syndrome and what it does to the community. And what it does in terms of disability. The promoting liquor in the best possible terms for a team of 18 and 19 coming from schooling and international text. There is what nothing speaks about education, but if you go to other parts, you will find that talking about investing, education, and I'm talking about Sabbath, and we need a political will when it comes to that. We need communities. The approach of Colorado, look, it's a community responsibility and commitment from the community. You'll find some of the communities are in good relationships with sex. Sometimes the dealers know a week before that they will get raped because of community. Fine. So we need parents who are true to their children, who are about to stand up and break the silence on the dealers. My chairperson, my right-hand side, spoke about the drug coming from the border. We don't have enough vaccine yesterday. The government is paying us to bring the drug in. So it's going to be a repetition of problems from one time to the next, dealing with the same issues, and we'll never get anywhere. We need national police to do the right thing and not accept that from communities at the expense of communities, because this is killing. I've just been here from Michelle Dick in Bogota, and I was very, very fascinated with the beautiful youth hub in Bogota, where the youth can divert their energy to the afternoon after school, other than roaming around, because border also plays a role in bringing this force against the youth. In that hub, you get all the school teachers involved and giving extra lessons, supervising children and students on math, science, and everything that happens. You get a gym. That's why their energy needs to be utilized accordingly. They get support. But if there is something in the traditional practices within the community, in London, in all our places, we get this traditional practices supervised and run accordingly, not to get a certain care that we see yourself, but to be run for the best achievement of the community, then we can win this race. Because recently the research shows that young people get bored and they use their energy to drag with such a family. And that is cherishing. I'm very impressed with the 1% and 99% that is present this year in terms of preventive measures. We are spend much of our budget in dealing with the problem than to prevent it. And this is happening in all tiers. We need to do more awareness campaigns in all tiers of government. Get the local government to come aboard, that is in support of what Mr. Kruger has just said. That awareness campaign will get the people out, and let's not forget the disability sector. which is always left out. Which is always left out. On my oversight culture session with you on board, you know exactly. We can do the legislation and practice and practice, but the communities are not involved. You're going to still have a problem for a long time. But get the communities and our program in place, and we will win at the end of the day. I thank you. Thank you very much. I'm not going to allow the secretary to respond as of now, because she's going to want us anyway. So I am going to ask the correspondent to respond on some of the issues that have been raised. We all have the right to hold our different views, but we all have to act in the best interest of the nation. We all have to act in the best interest of our own children. I like the spirit of the mother out there, that I will not keep up for as long as I live. I'm fighting, I think I'm holding the traffic issue. And I think that if there are conscious spirit, then you should all be put into the order to collectively fight the traffic. Let me give the opportunity to the first presenter, if there's an issue here. Just respond to some of the issues that have been given.
I just wanted to respond with regard to the local municipality that can't evolve. I did not involve the resources we had to take the size of the Alvarado Farm Local Drive Action Committee. So that formula has been put into place, but I'm speaking about the day-to-day planning operation, which they need for that. And if you really have that out that had that problem with the local government has actually done the implementation. I think we started to follow the procedure. But our local regional partner social development is actually driving the resources for both at the moment.
I just want to make a comment about alcohol and contribution on power. Someone commented that 3.5 million that the alcohol industry contributes for what they say when raising and you know helping people to understand how to consume alcohol. As a health promotion foundation network, we find that problematic that they can put in, you know, 25 million again if they turn over because they are not selling alcohol products. So obviously it's not in the interest to inform people about the harm. So we can't expect clubs that carry and even drugs to also tell us why the drug is harmful for us. It doesn't make sense. So we feel that we should not be taking the money from the alcohol industry, but the alcohol industry must give the money to governments, trade, and then they must distribute that money. That they cannot say that they are trying to do this for harm, because they are the ones using their product, they are the ones selling their product. And the other thing that they argue with that 25 million is they focus on two campaigns. And one is don't drink if you're under 18. The other is don't drink and drive. And the third is don't drink if you're pregnant. So if people then, if you're between 18 and 80, you can drink. And you can drink as much as you want, you can do harm to it. But if you're under 18 or you're pregnant, then that's the only time you want to drink. But it actually doesn't align with the health impact of alcohol consumption. So they won't focus their messaging on how people have to understand how much one can drink, when can we drink, what the reasons are linked to this. It's not real information, it's just a very superficial way of saying that we need something.
Thank you very much. Before I announce the secretary of Secretary of and conclude, and give us the speech for now, please want to speak to the head of after lunch. I just want to thank you very much for allowing me to participate in the session. and I want to agree with her when she says this cannot be the last anything. There are departments that we need to get into and invite all the other people of the diabetes, including business, so that we arrive at solutions that are all binding and they are not solutions, because if we speak inside of the disorder, it's not going to have a device impact. We need to be out of our rooms and decide what is in the best interest of the user. I do understand they can, the gentleman over there says the peddlers are testing because they put no other alternatives because they are about to start using the disease and so on. But you cannot be able to sustain whether they engage in it because of that reason primarily or because of kickback. Is it kickback? Or is it genuinely a case of really not being able to get any other employment or any other economic activity? That is why this is not really last anything. It's the piece of one time to put that this is what they are saying. Or over 50% to conclude.
Thank you very much, Madam Joanna. Madam Joanna, she is a chaplain on her own right for education and recreation, but she's also a member in this committee. I want to welcome and appreciate the two presentations of the main concert with Elder Around the Park. Thank you very much from the community with taking it upon yourself and defend your future for our youth department. That is where it starts. How I wish the strategy had the same understanding as community on what you have been supporting. But I think as the parliament doing oversight, especially now that the president was great and instructive department to do something. It may be one interesting oversight to do and see how far are they with the project that are supposed to be included in this country. Maybe for the future for the committee, because we are going to start the vision of the committee, it could be one of the committees to say, let's call the strategy and the department that are involved there and see how far away after the president's instruction to intervene them. But I really appreciate for that community day. That is the spirit. I want to say, taking from that, the one input that you can do, whatever you can do, with a long agenda of involved community, there's nothing you can do. Fully agree with it. But my check is that we need each and every one of us, whether you're an NGO to plan or you are an NGO to implement or you are an affected community. There is not one size fits all. We need everyone to be involved. Because we have a problem as a nation. The reason being that is that for me, there is no one to blame. We must stop blaming each other. Because some of these things happen behind those closed doors. When we say police are not there all the time. When this act of alcohol abuse is happening, it's happening in our bedrooms, in our rooms. What do we say? We want to have a police in each and every house. Can we afford as a nation? We cannot. That is why each and every one of us is important to participate and be involved. On the other delegation, when I open, thank you very much for that question. I'm sorry that I asked you because the presentation was too long, which means that too, we need another engagement. Very important fact there, not opening our eyes. And there was a mention of research, there has been enough research, enough information to come to a policy conclusion. The question I have now is that has there been comparison to the research outcomes? Analysis of all of them to come up with one another. To say, when we say, what are the causes of drug abuse? And we are in one way saying 1, 2, 3, 4, and we give those are the causes. There has to be some way to stand there. Because you can't expect government to take policy decisions for legislation based on one effect. There must be an analysis of all of them. Then two, it will be very much easy for government to take a decision if you are talking with one voice. If they call us the estate, we do want this health foundation. If all of us here were listening to each and every one of them, we do want this health foundation. Independent. But now, it's good that you're raising it and most important I say, maybe when we change this portion for once, let's take it from there. Do we want a health foundation that has multi structures in one, like you were presenting it? What about these other NGOs? Small, they're compatible with generating support. Do they want to be part of it or not? What about funding? How do we fund them? Talk about independence. To what extent do you want to be independent? How are we going to affect these others who are part of it? If we are that independent, can government still have an opportunity to influence how you fund these other organizations? I'm just raising a thought-provoking question that is not as great as it is. You may find that others have got other ideas about it. It's a very good thing. We start about it with some, not once, not twice, or even. And I'm glad that we're discussing it too. But it's something that we will check further. And it's fully after that we may use that money there instead of them using it. If you talk about billions for advertising later, this money could have done a number of things. In conclusion, I just want to say thank you very much for the participation in this debate to each and every one of you. We're going to break for lunch. When we come back, we have only two presentations. It's up to you. The longer you make the presentation, the longer you speak, the longer time all the students here. But if you can be able to just to try and minimize time that you're spending on the presentation and discussion, we can conclude this. Thank you very much.